This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, the O-Dog. We'll see what happens. We're having some internet issues, which can happen. Again, we've been doing shows from home for a year, and it's actually been pretty good. It's been pretty smooth, all things considered. So the O-Dog is taking a sledgehammer to his modem right now, and we'll see if that will help. And if it doesn't, we're all out of ideas. Who knows? But Ray Ferraro will join us here in just a moment. The Leafs back in action tomorrow night, coming off a loss last night, which is a rarity, only the fifth time they've lost all year. And today appears to be the day for GMs throughout the league to speak, and specifically GMs of really disappointing, awful teams, because Jim Benning made that announcement yesterday, I think. Hey, I'm just going to come meet with the media. And it doesn't appear to have been received very well, because Benning's been on the job there for 7 years, and he keeps trying to convince people he needs more time, which doesn't really fit with reality. And yet Kevin Adams, the GM down in Buffalo, who has only been there for like 6 months, he came out today and decided to speak. And what's he going to say other than we're terrible and this is disappointing? Yeah. But I guess I give him credit for meeting with the media. I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not cowering, but the Adams one is a bit of a weird one. Friday at 4:30. Like, that's a – would you call that a news dump?
Yeah, and what is the significance of now? Like, these teams have played 20 games. It's not like you're at the All-Star break or even at the halfway mark yet.
Right. I mean, maybe they're just questions. Like, there's been a little bit of noise about Eichel potentially asking for a trade or not. I think that was the burning question. Apparently, he said there, you know, he talks to Eichel constantly and there has been no trade request. Well, what's he supposed to say? Yeah, he did. Like, even
if
Jack
out.
Eichel. Yeah,
it's a disaster here and he wants out.
Even if he did ask, there's no reason to make that public. Like, if you're the manager, what you do is if you got to deal with your stuff in-house. So, you know, they've got enough problems there. I don't know. I don't think if Jack Eichel is unhappy, you've got to find a way to either make him happy or find a way to figure out the problem there.
Well, the thing is, it appears to me it's a pretty simple solution to make him happy, or a simple answer, very difficult solution. The answer is, please help me win games, which goes without saying. He's been in Buffalo for years now. They've never even come close to being a playoff team, let alone gone on a cup run. But the solution is potentially turning over the whole organization again, and I just don't know if you have that luxury.
Right.
If you're Kevin Adams in Buffalo, if you're the GM there, if you're the owner, are you going to go through another coach, and then you're going to, what, trade more players, and what are you going to do? Because they just keep ramming their head into the wall, and it goes nowhere.
Well,
they lost again last night.
They're
a disaster.
They need – I actually, you know, Jack – came on our show the other day and he was talking basketball, but he made a great point. Like, it should start at the top. You need somebody between the manager and ownership, a president that is a long-standing hockey guy and maybe somebody that's familiar with that organization. All I could think of is Pat LaFontaine was there.
He had it, though. He was there for 15 minutes and then something went wrong.
Something went wrong. That's what I'm saying. I think that their issues stem, as you know, it goes right to the top. And you can't fire the owner, but I think the owner has some issues there too, as far as hiring.
I'm not going to deny that, but, you know, at some point, usually you something happens for you. Something gets lucky for you. And the trump card on that is, look at the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
He owns that team too. And somehow it worked out. Now, Jack referenced the fact that it was Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. You bring in the right GM, the right coach, and everything changes. That could be the case in Buffalo. You bring in the right GM and the right coach, maybe they do get to a different spot. But to me, it's like they've gone through coaches. They've gone through GMs.
But
it's players. Their team isn't good.
Well, think of – but they're actually – I don't mind their team. They've got a pretty decent spine. It's just they haven't lived up to potential. They haven't – like Jeff Skinner – you know, you go down the list. Nobody's played up to their potential. I like their goaltender. I like some of their D. Like, do they need work, more work? Absolutely. I'm not defending that. But take a look at the history of the hires. You just mentioned it. You know, McDermott, the guys for the Bills. Take a look at the hires for Buffalo. What was the, I'm drawing a blank, his glasses, the guy, he looked like the guy from The Office, the manager, came from Ottawa. Before,
oh,
Tim Murray.
Tim Murray.
Tim Murray was there. Nice guy, you know, but.
No, it blew up. It was terrible.
How was his body of work? Ralph Kruger. You had Dan Bylsma. Somehow that didn't work. Now, I don't know if that was a Jack Eichel issue or not, but you've had some good people there. But then have you had any, like, legendary managers or coaches there in the last 10 years?
I mean, they had Darcy Regier forever, and they had Lindy Ruff. Like, that connection worked for a long, long time in Buffalo. But, yes, maybe it is at the top. I'm sure it is. I'm not disputing that it is. But it's also this team sucks. I mean, it's just not a good team, and it hasn't been for a long time. You can pick out individual players. I'm with you. I like individual players on Detroit. They're not a good team. Ottawa, they're not a good team. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. You mentioned it, Ray, yesterday that for whatever reason Jim Benning was speaking today, and I guess Kevin Adams did the same thing, the GM down in Buffalo. These bad, underperforming teams, all of a sudden the GMs feel like, maybe I have to do a presser today. I guess I have to.
No, they don't.
No, because they didn't say anything that anyone wants to hear.
So why go out there and just open yourself to get kicked in the shins again? Like, why do it? Don't. The answer is, don't say anything. Do your job, because is this a plea to who? Is this a plea to ownership? Is it a plea to your fans? Like, Jim Benning came out and said, I can't negotiate, or I'm not going to negotiate with Hughes and Pettersson before the trade deadline. Why not? What the hell's going to change between now and 3 weeks from now? Does that mean you can't do two things at once?
Yeah, what is the point of that?
Like, I'm just saying what's in the market here. That was one of the things that was questioned. You know, I'm going to talk to Tanner Pearson's agent, see if there's common ground. You know, I don't know what a draft pick is going to be worth at the deadline. Like, when are you going to find out?
Yeah, seems kind of important to have that information, I think.
You know, so I come off here like thinking it's easy to manage a team, and I don't. There's lots of factors that we don't get to be privy to. Noodles, you were in a coaching office. You saw issues in coaches' office, coaches' meetings with management and above management that we would never see on the outside.
Right.
Right? Like you would see it and you'd go, oh, probably the first time you went, oh, so that's why this happens.
Oh, I was horrified the first time you actually.
That made me laugh when you
no,
said
it's
you were
true
horrified.
Though. Horrified is the right word. You come from playing in the NHL. I was there for a long time. And as a player, you have, I believe, in your mind how things work. And then you see behind the curtain. And it's like anything. That's, you know, pro sports. You go to lawyers' offices. You know, you name it. You see behind the curtain and there's chaos. And there's things that you're like, holy smokes, I didn't realize this is the type of things that were discussed as well. Because after a loss, everyone's the worst player in the world. We've got to do this. We've got to trade that. After a win, everybody's the greatest player. Like, the highs and lows behind the scenes, and I think it stems for everyone. I was horrified when I first went through that process, and then you become numb to it because it's part of your job trying to battle every day to make that team better.
So, okay, so now I'll get to Kevin Adams. He's dealing with ownership that's been there for 9 years and never made the playoffs. He gets brought in because he knows the Pegulas. He's apparently a very sharp guy, but he knows the Pegulas. The Pegulas know him through the hockey academy, and he gets handed this mess.
Yeah.
And so now you're learning on the job. I read this article, and I thought, like a lot of us probably, and you know, you guys separate yourself if you don't believe this, but when Tom Dundon took over in Carolina, I'm like, what is he doing? Like, it makes no sense. I talked to a couple of guys that were, you know, that went through. Remember, they had basically like open auditions for the, or interviews for the GM's job.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys that dropped out of it, I happened to run into them. And they said one of the factors was that he wasn't offering a lot of money for that position, the general manager spot. Well, his view is that he's going to take X number of dollars, and that's going to be his management budget. But his thought was, there's not two people that can do this job. I think I can hire several people to do smaller roles of this major job, pay them accordingly, and I'm still going to have the total management budget that I might have had if I hired one guy or two guys. Like, Toronto's got a, you know, of course, has got a massive budget. Look at their front office. Look how many people are there. They must be bumping into each other half the time.
Right.
But they've all got a specific job. Now, they can pay at a different level, of course, and so they're, you know, they've got, you know, really qualified people that we see, Brendan Pridham and Lawrence Gilman, et cetera, that are in and have been through management there because they've broken that up into individual specialties. To hand an inexperienced guy your general manager's job, like, how do you think that's going to work? Jim Benning was noted as a really good scout. Okay, you're a great scout. We're going to take you away from what you do best, which is scout, and you're going to be the manager. Like, how does that make any sense?
Well, they're 7 years into it, and they're still trying to...
And now he says it's going to be two more years.
Right.
That's why I say, who's he pleading with? Ownership?
But
that's the fans and media, I think. I mean, probably all... You could check every box. I mean, clearly he's going to have to answer for this to the owner at some point, but the fans and the media, they feel the way they feel about him.
But let me jump in here.
He's done in Vancouver.
You're right, Brian, and you're right, but let me ask both of you a question. This isn't Kevin Adams' mess. He's just trying
not
to clean. But that's what I'm saying. Like, we look at it and go, like, this guy's not qualified. This guy's not. You're right. Now, he's learning on the job. But he's inherited a lot of things that he's trying to clean up on the go. Like, it's not like he can shut his organization down for a year and go, okay, I need to clean this contract up. I need to, you know, I need to develop these
guys.
But
that's the nature of the job, Noodles. When do you ever, outside of Kyle Dubas taking over a pretty good team, generally
right.
speaking, if you're a new GM, it's because the last guy was a real failure and it's a mess.
Right.
Like, how
right.
many guys show up and they're just like, this is awesome. Like, Jim Rutherford, I guess, in Pittsburgh kind of had it, and
right.
Dubas to an extent. But mostly it's like, this team is really a disaster.
Right.
That's why you're here.
But
that's why you're hired.
You're right. But what I was saying is, like, I 100% believe him when he says, like, this is 2 years away from what I think I'm trying to do
but
here.
But Benning said that.
You're right.
Not Adams.
You're right. What I'm saying is, I'm not trying to defend those guys, but I'm looking at the bigger picture. Is there's certain scenarios where you go, I need time to fix this. Give you an example, like, Ken Holland comes into Edmonton. He's got the golden goose. He's got Draisaitl under term, and they look pretty good that way. But he's got some things that need to be cleaned up just from the previous manager. But meanwhile, people judge on, okay, that organization, it's been year after year. Well, it's only Ken Holland's situation for a year. That's why I'm kind of defending Kevin Adams. You know?
I hear you with Adams, but Benning is cleaning up Benning's mess. But Benning
right.
is not
yeah,
included
right.
in this chat.
One of the great
lines of... that I can think of, and I hope I don't screw this up, was at one point the Oilers fired Kevin Lowe as the GM, Scott Housen as the assistant GM, and Craig McTavish was the coach.
Right.
And then a few years later, they brought back Lowe, McTavish, and Housen, and they were back in the management. And Rob Tichkowski said or wrote in the paper, the Oilers felt that in order to clean up the mess left behind by Housen, Lowe, and McTavish, they should hire Housen, Lowe, and McTavish.
Right. Exactly.
And so Jim Benning, you know, look, your body of work is your body of work, right?
Yeah.
There were lots of years I sucked. And I could say, oh, my wingers were no good or whatever, but it's my body of work as a player. He's been the manager here for 7 years. The contracts that they're trying to get out from underneath, he signed them.
Yeah.
His name's on the right side of the paper. The contracts Ken Holland's trying to get out of, he didn't sign them.
Right.
So you have to, Kevin Adams, I mean, he signed Taylor Hall, but he didn't sign Jeff Skinner.
Right.
Right, so he's got to, there's a mess there that he's got to try and dig out of. He didn't hire Ralph Kruger. If he likes Ralph Kruger as a coach, great, he'll be back. If he doesn't, then he's going to have to make a change. But eventually, the wheel's got to stop spinning. And to hire an inexperienced person, I think you put them in a really difficult spot. Like, how are they going to navigate learning the job when trying to dig out of a pile of you-know-what that's up over their head?
Agreed.
Well, and it's a good segue into a guy who's very familiar with both, literally and figuratively, as a farmer and as a coach, in Daryl Sutter, because he steps into Calgary now, and Calgary's been a really underwhelming, underperforming team. I thought they'd be better. Ray, I know you thought they'd be better. I thought they would make the playoffs. I thought they were good. I still think on paper they're a good team. But Jeff Ward is out, the second coach in the league to be let go, both of whom play or coach in Canadian cities, Julian in Montreal, and now it's Ward in Calgary. I think there's something there. We'll get to it in a moment. But what do you make of this move, Daryl Sutter taking over in Calgary?
Well, I was doing the game last night, as you know, and Noodles texted and said, hey, Daryl's back in Calgary. And I read it, but I was doing the game, and so I read it, and I was like, oh, yeah, and I kind of pitched my phone aside. And then I read it back, and I'm like, Daryl. And it took me, I'm like, Daryl. Like, there's only one Daryl, and that's Daryl Sutter. And so I couldn't have been more shocked. You know, like, I didn't even know that was in the realm of possibility, or this would be whom they would be considering. Like, I couldn't have been more surprised, put it that way.
Well, he's going back to a team he's familiar with, clearly. I mean, he coached there. He's from Alberta. He's from up the road. And I don't think this team is built. It's not even close to being built the way the Kings were built when he took over. But the expectations are high, right? Like, when he took over in L.A., it was an underperforming team that the GM who had been there for a while thought should be better and needed a spark. And Calgary, I think, is in a similar spot. And we talked about it earlier. There's a couple things that I connect to Julian going and to now Jeff Ward going, is it's not a coincidence these are Canadian markets. It is more highlighted than ever before, the pressures of playing here and coaching here because of the nature of the business today with COVID. You're only playing Canadian teams. The focus is solely on Canadian teams, and you're getting focused across the country, right? Like, in a conventional year, we're just not focusing as much on Calgary as we are this year. So Toronto's talking about it. Montreal's talking about it. Vancouver's talking about it. And you have that, which I think leads to more urgency. I think you look at a division if you're a GM in Montreal or Calgary and you say, we can win this. You know, the Leafs are a juggernaut. They're a really good team. But they have their own demons to deal with in the playoffs, right? Like, until they prove otherwise, they're unproven come playoff time. Montreal doesn't scare you necessarily. Winnipeg, Edmonton. So if you're Calgary, you're like, we could make some noise. Why can't we win a couple of rounds here? And based on the theme of this conversation, the GM in Montreal, the GM in Calgary have been there for quite some time, and they've done a lot of heavy lifting. They spent a lot of money, and they thought their teams would be good. Hence, coach is out. We need someone to come in now, and we got to win right now.
And isn't it interesting, though? So Calgary goes with a veteran guy. Mm-hmm. Montreal goes with a younger guy. You have to have a feel for who you're bringing in, of course. Daryl's super familiar in Calgary. They would all know him, and if you've been around the game, you know him as well. And Burge is very familiar with Dominic Ducharme. He hired him for this purpose. Maybe it wasn't for this year, but maybe it was for down the road that he felt that that Dominic Ducharme could be a head coach. And so now he's in. So however they get there, you're right, Brian. The focus and the expectation, though, is two things that can't be overlooked. Like, the expectations in both places were much better than they're playing. I mean, I had them, Toronto, Montreal, Calgary in my preseason stuff. And right now that doesn't look very good. And so I'm sure they had to be really encouraged with their teams. They both had really, another similarity, they both had really active off seasons. Really active.
Right.
And the results just aren't there for them right now. And well, so they make the change. I will say this about Darryl, and Jamie, of course, you know him way better than I would, but like he's kind of an older guy in a younger mind. The people I know in LA talked about how much you'd be surprised what he likes and knows and uses with analytics. Like he comes across like the farmer, and he talks all the time about shoveling crap and, you know, if you get stuck in the culvert and you're, you know, and all those things. And there's no press conferences sometimes better than Darryl's, because when you leave, you don't know what the hell he was saying. And then you think about it and you go, oh, that kind of made sense.
Yeah.
And so like I know he's an older guy. I know he's an old school guy, but something tells me he's not going to be as disassociated with the younger player as a lot of people might think.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. What I was going to kind of chime on, too, is you look at both organizations that have had coaching changes. You know, you're right. You bring in Darryl, who's a more established guy and has won, and, you know, Alberta boy, all of the things. But I think Brad Treliving is trying to figure out once and for all, like, what does he have as a core, too? You know, that's a difference. Like, Mark Bergevin still has young players. Like, it's the two teams are built differently. So, you know, with Bergevin, you go with a younger, maybe more progressive, I guess, viewed as progressive in Dom.
Yeah.
But, you know, he can grow with some of those young players that he has. Whereas I think Sutter comes in and takes a look at this core from inside and goes, we can win with Goodrow, Monahan, Lindholm, Backlund, guys that have been there for a while, Giordano, you know, guys that have been there for a while. Darryl talked today, like, he loves the goalie. He's like, you need a goalie, and, you know, Markstrom's as good as anybody. Like, so the way that their teams are built is a lot to me of how the coaches were chosen as well, because Darryl is a guy that, you know, is going to see from the inside if that core can work once and for all. I would argue, because that's
well,
all we've talked about.
What if it can't, though? I mean, then you've really got to, like, you just hired a new coach who told you your team isn't good enough, potentially.
Yeah, but then what don't you think, Brian? Like, you know, we talked about last year, was that going to be the year that Brad Treliving had to dive into that core?
Right.
Well, they're going to have the answer here pretty quick.
That's more my point. You're going to sink or swim with that core and figure it out. It either works or it doesn't work, because there's the biggest litmus test. A guy who is very honest, not shy to you know, hold people's feet to the fire as far as accountability in that room. And with Montreal, there's still some growth there, I believe. And you've got a younger coach who's going to carve his teeth on the job in Montreal.
When we were doing a playoff series, 100 years ago, and it was St. Louis and L.A., and Ken Hitchcock was coaching St. Louis, and Darryl was coaching L.A., and they were running the coaches' availabilities back-to-back. And you never liked it if they scheduled Hitch's first, because by the time Hitch was finished, Darryl was already done. He was like, Darryl would fire out 6 words, 7 words, boom, finished. And yeah. Then Hitch was still going. And so in one of the games, I had to go and interview him between the benches. And, you know, I know Darryl a little bit, but so I went over and I'm like, hey, Darryl, you ready to do this? He's like, yep, no problem. He pulled up his pants. I asked him a question, and he was trying to make a reference to around the boards, but he was talking with his hands, and, like, no words were coming out. Like, he was trying to say the yellow dasher board.
Yeah.
But that wasn't coming. And then he just kind of, he made it work. And I was like, that was one of my most enjoyable interviews, because I'm not even sure what that sounded like. But in his way, he made his point. And so the guys in L.A., they respected him. They played hard for him. There was an expiration date.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, he signed for this year and 2 more years. Like I said, I was really surprised. I was surprised that he was the name that I saw. I wasn't surprised that there was a coaching change.
No, exactly. And as you said, you were calling that game last night, and credit to Vancouver. You know, they found a win. They played pretty well. I thought Demko was great. And it's a strange mentality here. It's a foreign mentality here, and I know I continue to reference that. But I thought even in a loss, the Leafs played pretty well. You know, they had some hop. It's a back-to-back. They played a lot recently. And I fully expect they regroup and play like rock stars tomorrow night.
Well, I mean, so Matthews misses an open net.
Yep.
And he hits the post. Tavares missed the open side twice on the same play. You know, he just missed it. I mean, that happens. Two of the goals shouldn't have gone in. One of, you know, the one that Hall scored, but that puck hit Hutchison right in the middle of his body and unfortunately jumped up over top of him. And then the second Vertanen goal can't go in. But all of that in the mix, and they were fine last night. You're not going to win all the time. You're yeah. not. And Vancouver played really a terrific game last night. I thought they were excellent. Demko made four or five really, really solid saves. But they deserved it. They didn't steal that game because of the goalie, but the goalie was part of it. It was a big part of it, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, it's their fifth loss of the year here in Toronto. You move on. It's all good. I assume Freddie will play tomorrow night, and I think Matthews is going to start, you know, connecting here again soon. And when that happens, look out. It was a wild night last night in the sporting world, and I thought you guys handled the news of Walter Gretzky passing away incredibly well. You know, Duthie was kind of thrown at him, like right before the second intermission. He handled it really well. The panel handled it well. I thought Gord spoke very eloquently of his relationship and history, and everyone's got some sort of a connection or story about Walter Gretzky, and says a lot about him, right?
You know, like there were so many stories, and just hearing the people talk, it's funny in this, or interesting in this, I guess, is, you know, Walter Gretzky passes away last night, and we hear about his kindness and his willingness to talk hockey and be around hockey and how he loved the kids. And then, sadly, we learn about Chris Schultz passing today.
Right.
And you know, you read the people that worked most closely with him.
Yeah.
And it's the same theme, like through the remembrances of Schultze about, yeah, he was a big guy, but he had a big heart. He was a team-first guy. He was friendly. He was, you know, like everybody talking. Like the theme for both Walter Gretzky and Chris Schultz was consistent. I mean, just a sad, sad day. I mean, we went to bed last night knowing of Walter and wake up this morning and learn about Schultze. And I will say, I thought Gino was on SportsCenter, and I thought his words were just outstanding.
Yeah, he really has been doing a great job. And I wasn't aware of how close Gino was with Walter and Wayne.
We just found out how close Gino was with Walter and Wayne. Duthie told a story of how Gino and Walter went to Europe together on just like the two of them on a trip where Wayne, you know, what was it, Hazy?
It was a charity event, and Wayne paid for it. I think it was like a silent auction type. Hey, who's going? A trip for two to Europe, and Wayne bought it and told Gino, I want you to have it. But Walter is going with you. And Gino was like, all right, I guess we're going to Europe with Walter, which is just an incredible story. And I'm almost disappointed I haven't heard it until today. It's such a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, just, man, it's funny when, you know, when that news comes and, you know, how many of us in the hockey world or in Canada really had seen Walter's picture image across our screens over the last 40 years.
Yep. Everyone.
You know, and so it was just sad stuff. It doesn't, you know, I lost my dad when he was 66, and in a lot of ways, I think, like, you know, my life has never really been the same. And, you know, he meant so much to me. And when people would ask and say, you know, how old was he? And I'd say 66, and they'd say, you know, they're looking for the right thing to say. And they, you know, they say, oh, he was so young. And my initial thought was 66, 86, whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, it's your dad.
Yep.
And
exactly.
So we have all these stories and remembrances about Walter Gretzky, but that's Wayne and his brothers and sister's dad. And
that's exactly right.
sometimes that just gets, I think, gets overlooked a bit.
Yep, no, that's a great point. Well put, buddy. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again Monday at 5.
We'll talk to you then, guys. Have a great weekend. See ya.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They're giving you a break this March with rates from 0% and up to $3,000 back on in-stock 2020 Highlander hybrids. Visit MapleToyota.com. Gord Miller will join us in about an hour. Izzy Gutierrez of ESPN on the Raptors going into the All-Star break. They had their NBA All-Star draft last night. It got awkward for Utah at the end of it. We'll tell you more about that. We'll get into it. And we're tracking the Arnie Palmer. There's a lot going on in the sports world. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Israel Gutierrez will join us of ESPN, NBA analyst and reporter, in about a half an hour. The Raptors losing back-to-back games going into the weekend, and that drops them two games below 500. They're still, you know, they're hovering around the playoffs, and
yeah,
I think
right
once
there.
They get through this, we know the nature of the NBA. You take three of your best four players out of the lineup, you're in big trouble. Big trouble, and that's what happened. With Ananobi out, Siakam out, VanVleet out, you're in trouble. And it caught up with them. They battled last night. They had a lead at the half. They were in it, and it slipped away, and that can happen when Boston is starting to come out of it themselves, and Tatum is a Raptors killer. You know, Tatum is a Raptors killer, and he played well last night, and you know, Kemba's back, and Jaylen Brown was pretty good for them. Like, they're a good team, a tough out on the best of times. You take those three studs out of your lineup, you're in trouble. It's not making excuses. That's just a reality.
But also, guys, heading into the All-Star break, you know, like, guys are mailing
time.
It in. You know,
yep.
You're not getting everyone's best, put it that way. It's almost like the battle of which team is a little bit more focused because – there's so much going on. You know, guys are planning. Not that, I mean, it's a pandemic, so I don't think they're planning trips to the Bahamas or anything like that. But it's some downtime, so you probably hope to get home to see your family or, you know, something different than what you've been experiencing all season long.
You know what? That is going to be a story that comes out of this because I have seen some tweets and some reports, and I use the term loosely reports because I don't know how definitive all this stuff is, but that there might be some parties planned and there may be some things going on when they get in to Atlanta. You're right.
Right.
Like if they're going to fly in the morning of, maybe it's after the game. If they fly in the night before, maybe it's the night before. The NBA All-Star Weekend is historic for the parties. And yes, we're dealing with a pandemic. We're dealing with a different mood and different restrictions. But, you know, we talk to Sam all the time. Sam Mitchell lives outside of Atlanta. He's like, you wouldn't even know COVID exists.
Yeah.
You know, that's where courtside Karen, you know, came
exactly.
into our lives. Like, it's a different world down in Atlanta. And that's – if you're Adam Silver – if you're the commissioner, you're the one that fought for this, you're the one that pushed it through. A lot of your players have been very public about having no interest in doing this and not thinking it's safe or makes sense or smart. And Silver, simply because of the economics. Like, it's very transparent. It's not because of the history of the game.
Right.
They couldn't care less.
Nobody cares.
It's all about TV money and endorsement deals. We had Windhorst on earlier in the week. He said over in China, it's massive. Which is interesting considering what's happened between the league and China over the last 12 months, where a lot of the votes online were coming from China. I think Windhorst said it had not been official yet, but it was trending in the direction that it would be on TV over there and accessible to everyone in the country, which is a massive market for the NBA.
Right.
So you're clearly playing this game, and you're pushing this game simply for economics and simply for money.
Yeah.
And if there's parties and outbreaks – you got to own that if you're Adam Silver. And I think it's a big gamble.
I think so, too. Because you know what? There is going to be one story. We know it. And you defined reports and the truth. Because you know there's going to be reports that this guy got up to this and that guy got up to that. And they were in each other's rooms.
We may never really know the truth.
But what the fallout will be is if somebody comes away from that with COVID. And then brings it back to their team. And then, you know, the team has to be shut down. The schedule has to be readjusted. Like, I was against it right from when it was announced. I'm like, why would you put yourself in another situation, having a bunch of guys coming from everywhere across America into one spot And yeah, you can create a safe space, and for the most part, they're doing, and they're not flying, you know, Southwest. Like, they're going to probably private jet in and all of that type of stuff. But why risk it? And you said it. It's purely money. It's
purely
economic
money.
Driven.
Yes, purely. And you also, you're dealing with players and staff letting their guard down, right? Like,
right.
This is a vacation. Yes, you're playing, you're performing, but All-Star Week is about getting away. It's about relaxing, and listen, we could all use it. Everyone could use it right now. It's a stressful time for everybody, and you get into a scenario where, like, yeah, I'll go out. Like, you know, someone's throwing a party, and everyone's getting together. I'm going to go, and then it unravels, and I know that's a cynical view, and I'm certainly not hoping that that happens, but it would fall on the desk of Adam Silver. You know, he'd have to answer for it. So that, I guess we'll see. You know, we'll see what comes out of the weekend.
Yeah, how could you just – but, like, if a guy who's a young – let's say a 25-year-old player decides to go and there's a little get-together there, and, like, how can you lay it at his feet? You've created this environment.
Right. You're saying we're all coming together.
Right. You've created that. So it would be interesting to see if he would get fined for, well, going to a party at the All-Star game.
Oh, like I would think the rules would still apply. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be adhered to, right? And I don't think so. Like, where was Lou Williams?
Right.
The famous chicken wing, you know, had to go down to the Peeler to grab some wings. That was in Atlanta, as far as I can remember. So, you know, you're back there. You're back in the scene of the crime with Lou.
I forgot about that.
The strip joint.
There
wings.
Is going to be some stories coming out of there.
It's going to happen, man. And with social media and with pictures and videos and Instagram and TikTok, it's happening down there.
I agree.
Blake Griffin was officially bought out by Detroit, and all – for starters, I don't know if he can play anymore. We'll ask Gutierrez about this in about 25 minutes.
Right.
His game has deteriorated. His body has broken down. But all reports indicate that he's going to Brooklyn, you know, and there's a shot up on TSN 4, Shams Charania saying the Nets are the leaders to sign him at this point. And Brooklyn was a mess for so long. That town is owned by the Knicks, who are an even bigger mess and a more long-standing mess than the Nets.
Right.
But it speaks to just the star power and how it can draw and how it completely changes everything about your team. Like, now that Irving, Durant, and Harden are there, the second they bought him out, Blake Griffin, I thought to myself, he's going to Brooklyn. That's exactly where he's going to go. And it's just superstars push everything in this league, and they change everything about the league. And the viewpoint of a market, a team, just based on who is on that team. And we saw with Kawhi up here. When Kawhi was up here, the Raptors were just looked upon differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, you know, everyone's linked to that team now because it's somebody wants to get on
a
moving
runner.
Train. Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. It's a front runner, especially in the East, I would say, right?
Yep. Like, they're big time.
Big time front runner. So you want to jump on that train. And it's not – he's gotten paid, so he's not going to sign for – a boatload of money. They'll just squeeze him in and away you go. Now, to your point, can he play? Like, I think his game has dropped off so much.
Oh, massively.
There was a time where he was an absolute stud.
He was. Like, he was a first overall pick who did not play his rookie year because of injuries coming out of college, which probably should have tipped us off at where this was going.
Right, right.
But he was the primary focus of Lob City with the Clippers and you know, DeAndre Jordan, and they were a really good team and an up and coming team, and the Clippers finally put themselves back on the map, and in large part it was because of Blake Griffin. He could jump out of the gym, you know, one of the most vicious, just, you know, nasty dunkers of all time.
Yeah.
Not a guy that's that tall. I think he's 6'9" or 6'10". Like, that is tall, but relatively speaking.
Right.
But just a guy that could jump out of the gym, and he just doesn't have it anymore. You know, he's been broken down.
He had the weird exchange with Ballmer, too. Is that – remember, wasn't that after he got traded or whatever?
That's right. Ballmer went for the handshake, and he blew him off. And then
he
Griffin
went bombing
claimed,
out of the gym. Yeah.
But remember – yes, exactly. Like, Ballmer went over to him, and then he just immediately turned and took off, and he claimed it was
– his routine or
his
something,
His routine.
Right?
And he had his headphones on, and for whatever reason, he didn't see him or hear him, which was completely bogus.
And Ballmer
hates Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, and Ballmer kind of got left with, like, the holding, like, the fake handshake.
Holding the bag. It was awkward.
He was just standing there.
Yeah, it was really awkward. Although, do you blame him? You're in L.A. You're the king of L.A. or one of, and now you get shipped off to Detroit.
Yeah.
That's a tough downgrade. Like, I think he was having a pretty good time in L.A.
Yeah.
Pretty good time.
Yeah, he was the guy.
With all due respect to Detroit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is the guy. That's exactly what happened. He left them hanging, Steve Ballmer. It's a great video. I'm sure it's out there. It's probably got a million views on YouTube.
I think it's a gif. Like in my mind, all I can remember is him, like, you know, and Ballmer kind of laughed it and played it off, like, aha, you know, that's him. And I forgot about his routine. But, you know, like, that
Steaming.
Guy's worth, what, $50 billion?
Over $50 billion. I think he's a top 10 richest person on earth.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. The bank account's pretty cool. Getting left hanging, though. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You look like an idiot and feel like one, too.
Agreed.
Israel Gutierrez of ESPN in about 20 minutes. Gord Miller will join us later this afternoon. Our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Still to come, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Izzy Gutierrez of ESPN in about 15 minutes on the NBA going into the All-Star break. Gord Miller will join us later this afternoon. Saw a story online today where there's a woman looking to divorce her husband. They've only been married for like a year.
Okay.
And her claims, or the case that she is making for divorce, is the guy wears a wig and she didn't know that it was a wig.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That is tough.
Really tough. Really, really tough. Really tough to believe her at the same time, unless this is the greatest rug we've ever seen on earth. And if so, I'd have to see a picture of that. But that's a tough one to lose your marriage over that, you know.
Well,
everything goes wrong. You know, things go wrong. 50-50 going in. Everyone understands that. Those are the numbers. But your wife is going to leave you in the dust because she thought that was your real hair. And it turns out it wasn't.
But what was he, like, sneaking off to shower and stuff? Like, because if you wear a rug, I think you have to, you know, you would have to maintenance that thing. And,
oh, yeah.
And, like,
really careful with that.
That thing is on the lampshade at night. You're not sleeping in it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, is he locking the door? Like, usually I would think he'd be showering. Like, I knew a guy who had a rug. And it was an old school one, and I think it was either sewn in on the sides or whatever. And in the shower was a garden hose, and he'd clean out underneath it, and the thing would, like, the water would come flopping out the front. Like, it was quite the spectacle when you're sitting there showering after practice, and this guy's, you know, blowing out the dust underneath his rug beside you with a garden hose. So,
yeah,
you know, and it's a bit awkward when it's the guy.
Well,
who's,
that's
quite
it. I mean,
respected.
And to be fair to her, if you weren't prepared for that and you see it, that will put you in a state of shock. You know, that
right.
might. I've seen flimsier reasons for divorce than someone misleading you on what you thought was a beautiful mane, like just a beautiful head of hair, something that maybe you're very attracted to, and all of a sudden it comes on false pretenses, and you find out that the thing was made in a factory somewhere.
Well, Agassi, I mean, that was, to me, that is the most shocking hair story of all time. Andre Agassi
easily
saying that was a wig.
Easily.
In sports, yeah.
Yeah, easily.
Like that, him saying that was a wig, like, that floored me. Like, when that story was released, like, him saying, yeah, no, that was a wig, and basically could you imagine how self-conscious you would be? This guy's playing at the biggest tournaments on the biggest stage, and he's worried about, if that thing gets a little oily under there because of the sweat, it comes flying out over the net.
Right. What's the glue situation like? You know, like, what's, is it a staple? Is it glue? Is it tape? You know, like, what are you, there it is. Megan just got, like, on the left, that's a beautiful head of hair. Like, beautiful head of hair. I do think him wearing, now it makes sense him wearing the headband. Like, that thing was adhesive, basically.
Right.
Like, that was just a big roll of tape with Nike on it. To make sure that his salad didn't go anywhere.
You're right.
He got rid of it, right? When he went bald, when he went Messier, he just stopped wearing that.
Yeah,
so,
that was, I mean, now you look back on it, you look for signs. But you're right. Nobody saw the hairline because he had a giant headband on.
Right.
But
you wouldn't
just
think twice about it.
But what was he, mid-20s?
He was
like
young.
Early
that was
30s?
In the,
yeah,
that was, I think, late 80s, early 90s. Like, he was wearing jorts at that point,
right?
And playing in, like, cutoff jeans with hair and Guy was a stud out there. And a great, like, his career, you talk about a roller coaster. Like, he hit the scene. He was, I believe he got the number one in the world or was close to it, and he fell completely off the map. Like, he was down, I want to say he was like 217 in the world or something, like completely lost his game and found it again and moved right back up. And then had great battles with Sampras, and like, that was a golden era of tennis. But even with that being said, it doesn't even come close to the men's side over the last 15 years.
Right.
Like, I remember thinking Agassi and Sampras were the greatest ever. How could you touch it? Like, as a kid.
Right.
And now I'm like, Federer, Nadal, and Joker. Like, they just blow past the two of those guys.
Yeah,
like,
that's
just
true.
It's not even close, the resumes.
It just, it's shocking to find out, like, that wig was a lie.
Yes. That one hurt. Like, I supported that hair for a long time. I was an Agassi guy. My buddy was a Sampras guy. We would play tennis as kids.
Yeah.
I was Agassi with the fake salad, and it was fake. It was literally fake.
Now you know. It's a fake
now
wig.
I know. Hour three coming up, Israel Gutierrez of ESPN on the NBA All-Star break, and Gord Miller coming up on Walter Gretzky in the Leaf game last night, the Leaf game tomorrow night as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA license 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.